Good morning, listeners. We're back again with another episode of Riddles in the Dark, brought to you by the Tolkien Professor and the Mythgard Institute. We're sorry for the sort of unpredictable, variable schedule, the last-minute notice on when we're going, the late start due to me waking up late. Just, you know, the usual chaos that seems to accompany...
Dave getting married. I mean, God.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So, fortunately, we have, like... Corey completely changing his life.
Yeah, exactly. Me moving and Dave getting married. We've got lots of
we have no end of excuses, so you schedules. Guys can't possibly hold it against us. but we are back, we're taking.
But wait,
things...
Before you go forward, I just want to put in here as a wedding guest and representing everybody, you know, that is Dave's fan in the Dave Kale World Domination Network, that Dave did us proud at his wedding. There were so much Tolkien themed stuff. I mean, first of all, I must hand it to Teresa for being just so wonderfully tolerant. But he, even at his non-rehearsal dinner, he read a part of the Lay of Lathian. I mean, and the letter that he wrote. I mean, the poor the celebrant, when he read Dave's letter, because they each wrote each other a letter and then the celebrant read the letters, and Dave talked so much about stuff to do with Beren and Lúthien, the poor guy didn't know how to pronounce the words. Like, he didn't know how to pronounce Silmaril, and he didn't know how to pronounce stuff. So anyway, and when I stood up, actually, I didn't tell you this, Dave, but when I stood up to do the reading, because I did a reading for Beren and Lúthien as part of the ceremony, and I start out by saying, an excerpt from the Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien, I could hear in the crowd people go, oh. But it was a wonderful, wonderful wedding, and you—I thought you wove that stuff in great, and you guys were just beautiful, and it was super. And I shared a bunch of the pictures, so go
thank
look
you.
At the Riddles in the Dark page for the pictures that I shared.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, yeah, it was great. I'll tell you what. I'll finish our intro, and then I'll give the listeners just like I'll give them a few additional details as well. So we're here with Riddles in the Dark. We're taking it back to the beginning, or rather the beginning of the second movie. The topic today is how will the second film start? This is kind of a classic Riddles in the Dark question that we thought had gone we'd gone on too long without addressing it. This is how are they going to draw us in from the very first moment of the scene? And this is particularly interesting since I think the opening of the first film was nobody expected it to happen the way it did. So that's what we'll be talking about today. With me as always, I'm your co-host Dave Kale. With me as always are Trish Lambert and of course the Tolkien Professor, Professor Corey Olson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So yeah, you want to tell a few? I have, you know, so I am ready to do my traditional analytical spiel at the beginning of our episode.
10-minute introductory monologue.
exactly. As is customary.
Yes.
To move my microphone up so that when you make me laugh, I don't burst people's eardrums.
Right. Yes. And we don't get any more complaining Facebook messages.
Yes. But anyway, Dave, you want do tell us more about the wedding?
Sure, yeah, sure.
I give you. You know, many people have been asking. You know, how is married life treating you so far?
Oh yeah, yep. We had some friends get married a year ago who like us had been dating for a very long time and had lived in sin together for a couple of years before getting married. And I remember them telling us when I asked them like, how's married life? They say, the biggest difference is people keep asking us how married life is. I guess that's a little true of us. It's interesting. It gives you sort of a different perspective on things and maybe makes you look at things a little differently, interpret things differently. I remember what's really funny is I read an article like a couple days later, a blog entry on like the blog for Scientific American. They had a study or were talking about a study that some folks had done on what makes marriages last and sort of the psychology of it. And it was these guys who've done this thing where they've, you know, recorded a bunch of footage of couples discussing like their most recent argument they could remember. And they, you know, done the thing that they do where they go through and code all these things they notice. And they boiled it down to like these four principles, like contempt, stonewalling. I can't remember what some of the other ones were. But then they went through and they analyzed footage from Keeping Up with the Kardashians of Kim Kardashian and her husband, the NBA player whose name I can't remember. And that was pretty amusing. So that was fun reading those and thinking about that and thinking like, I think we can do it. I think we can beat the Kardashians. We can last longer than them. Yes. So the wedding was great. Trish did she did you guys all really proud. She got up and read the Silmarillion reading that we came to a consensus on that Corey and Trish and some of our listeners and the Silmarillionaires all helped us edit down and I think it was great. And hey, here's the major victory, Corey. Someone came up to me afterward. This is a guy who he works in Hollywood. He's a writer. He doesn't like fantasy in general. He came up to me and he said, "I've decided I like Tolkien because of your reading."
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I know.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that
That's
was good. See,
great.
there's so much that people who say like, "I don't like fantasy," or "I have nothing to do with fantasy," really so often have no idea. Like, it just like the concept of fantasy to them seems to be something which is detached from all human experience. You know, it's like it has nothing to do with anything, you know?
Yep.
And that's, I think, one of the things that when you can see it's, you know, so I can really see how the experience, not only of the fact that you are reading from Tolkien, but the way in which you were using it in your wedding. I mean, basically what you were doing was applicability. You know, you were
Yep.
illustrating, you know, sort of Tolkien's principle of applicability. And that's exactly, I think, what people tend to, and like people who are totally non-fantasy people, do seem to speak of it as if it's just like, why would I invest myself, you know, my time in reading something which is completely detached from, you know, all like my entire life and all human experience? Like, I'd have to take time out from the world in order to indulge in this totally irrelevant thing. And of course, as everybody knows who actually does read and study fantasy, it's anything but irrelevant to your life and to the world.
Yep.
It's a really good way of working through and dealing with your life in the world, actually.
Yep.
So sort of seeing that in action in your wedding, it totally doesn't surprise me that somebody, but again, but yeah, definitely, you know, well done on sort of illustrating that. You know, that's really cool.
That's right. That's right. So even through the wedding, I'm sitting here evangelizing Tolkien. Yes.
Right.
So that was fantastic. Trish and I both choked up at the same point in her reading, like right at the end,
We did. We're at the end.
with a little read, the last line that we included about
That
them,
line that you love.
them being
Yes.
together beyond the
Beyond the circles of the
circles of the
world.
world. Yep. So that was
Yep.
good. The little letter that Father Jerry had each of us write was I tied that directly into the reading. And yeah, he did. He multiple times had to chop and stop and say, "How do I pronounce this word?" And I'm glad because those little sort of mo the levity provided by those moments rescued me from bursting into tears, probably
Right.
like Sam. So that yeah, those things, it was all great, and I think people actually did appreciate it, even if they weren't familiar with the readings, they felt like it really, they were like, it felt thoroughly like you guys, like we could tell that that a lot of personal touches have been put in. And at the rehearsal dinner, as Trish said, I did in fact, because we had cut the Song of Parting out of the reading, we decided that was too long. So I compensated
Okay.
by reading an extended version of it from the Lay of Lethean. Yeah, from the Book of Lost Tales
rehearsal dinner.
at the rehearsal dinner.
If I can't subject my wedding guests to this, then I will subject my rehearsal people to twice as much
Yep.
to compensate. Excellent.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, it was great. Had a good time. I'm looking forward to that. The website, if people are curious for our wedding, was longexpectedwedding.com, and it's still up. And you can go check out the I used the Hobbiton sign font on the website, and I don't know. I might keep it going. Might actually use the blog. We'll see. So
Do as a blog. Do as a Mary blog now.
that's right. But let's get
All
on to some
right.
Hobbit. Corey, take it away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So the main thing, you know, one of the primary points of interest for me in the question of the beginning. I mean, this might be one of the topics which sort of seems to be kind of more trivia oriented in nature. That is, there's no real like book analysis and discussion that's really relevant to the question of where are they going to start.
But we can make one up.
How are they going to start the film? But anyway, here's though what I think about it. It is a really interesting moment for thinking about sort of bigger picture stuff. It's not about, you know, how are they going to take this one particular character or this one particular scene or sequence or anything like that, but really about how are they going to, what are they going to be focusing on thematically? It's not to say, of course, it would be way oversimplifying things to suggest that the opening scene, you know, lays out the theme for the entire film, but it's a really important moment. And if we think back to, you know, the examples that we have, just as an illustration, if we think back to the opening scenes, and I'm thinking here especially of the opening scenes of the Two Towers and the Return of the King films, you know, as those parallel moments of starting not at the very beginning of the story, but starting in the middle. And we see how they treated those. As you may recall, the opening sequence of the Two Towers film is the flashback to Gandalf and the Balrog on the bridge, which then continues that sequence from Gandalf's perspective instead of from the Fellowship's point of view, and with him plummeting down with the Balrog and ending with his fight on the mountaintop. And you may recall the context of all of that is that it's a dream that Frodo's having. At the end of that sequence, Frodo wakes up when they hit the water. So yeah, they don't do the fight on the mountaintop in that first sequence. But anyway, they do, you know, Gandalf and the Balrog plummeting down. So what that opening sequence gives to us in the Two Towers is not just a link back to what happened in the Fellowship of the Ring, and also a setup for the return of Gandalf as Gandalf the White in the Two Towers, though of course that opening accomplishes both of those things. But it invites us to think about Frodo and what's going on with Frodo in the Two Towers, being his trip to Mordor and his struggle with the ring, which is really emphasized through his interactions with Gollum and the kind of parallel that the film establishes, as of course the book does as well, between Frodo and Gollum and their relationships with the ring. It invites us to see the sort of the drama of Frodo's character in that story as in the context of Gandalf. So that connection between Frodo and Gandalf's stand against the Balrog, you know, that link, that juxtaposition of a Frodo struggling with the ring and Gandalf standing against the Balrog is how we start that film. And I think that works very interestingly, actually. Because, of course, you have the one thing, the Balrog, which is this, you know, very obvious external malevolent force, and, you know, the courage of Gandalf in standing against it, against what seemed like insurmountable odds. And, you know, this is certainly something in the book that's heavily emphasized in that scene, you know, showing the way that Tolkien in his description emphasizes how small Gandalf is in comparison to the Balrog, and how he, you know, he looks like a little bent withered tree, and he's just this one little, you know, spot of light which is being threatened to be engulfed by shadow and flame. But again, to make a connection the way that the film does between that very dramatic, very sort of climactic and external stand against darkness and Frodo's much more internal, much more prolonged, much less climactic, at least at that point in the story, stand against evil and his conflict with evil in his wearing of the ring and his relationship with the ring. That I think is really interestingly done. I think it's very well done in the film and has a really interesting effect. So again, does it mean that like that opening scene, you know, says what's important and what's going on in, you know, in the whole movie as a whole? No, but again, it's very interesting. And it, It does show us, it does give us some kind of cues about the film. Now, the Return of the King film, as we may recall, starts with the flashback to the finding of the ring by Diagol and Sméagol, and the throttling of Diagol. And, you know, that's an important scene as well. It's interesting that both of these scenes are kind of ultimately Frodo-related. The second one, much more strongly so, of course, as it strongly emphasizes the parallels between between Frodo and Gollum by showing Gollum in his pre-Gollum state and showing that dramatic, you know, the dramatic like montage of you know, Gollum becoming Gollum in appearance, as the ring corrupts him at the end. And of course, as you know, many people, anyone who has watched the video appendices of the films knows, Peter Jackson was going to emphasize that much more strongly by actually having a moment with Faramir at the end of the Frodo and near the end of the Frodo and Faramir sequence, where Frodo himself was going to like begin to adopt some of the manifest some of the physical characteristics that were going to be deliberately paralleled to those scenes of Sméagol in transitional mode between happy hobbit who then throttles his friend and, you know, the Gollum that we've already met. So again, we can see the way that that is that is set up, and obviously the way that the recollection, you know, the dramatization of the finding of the ring and the throttling of Diagol, how that sets us up for the Gollum scene at the end and, you know, Gollum's betrayal and seizing of the ring and falling into the fire. You know, again, there are some clear ways in which we are set up, in which the film is anticipating that and kind of informing our reception of those later sequences there as well. These are for me the things that I am thinking about as we approach talking about the beginning of the film. Because to me, the question of how are they going to start film two of The Hobbit is a very intriguing one, because it can potentially have a large impact on what the focal point of the second film is. Now, you notice in talking about the Two Towers opening, for instance, one of the things that is sort of most different between the Two Towers as an open, as a film two opener, and the Desolation of Smaug as a film two opener, is that the story had already divided. So from the beginning of the Two Towers, we have the two major plot strands already separate. You know, the rest of the Fellowship and Frodo and Sam. And we don't have that yet. That's not established going into the beginning of the second. Now, I think that we are going to get a split plot. We're going to get split plot strands in the second film, as Gandalf is soon going to depart and is going to go off and do his thing while the company continues on through Mirkwood. So that's going to happen in the second film, but it hasn't already happened. So I wonder if that is going to play a greater role in the beginning, and I sort of wonder how, you know, it's whether or not that's going to factor in, what kind of things they're going to, what kind of cues they're going to provide, what kind of juxtapositions they might invite in the opening sequence here. So for me, that's kind of what's at stake here. It's for me not just a point of curiosity, in as much as I am interested, as I always am, you know, in thinking in these kinds of ways, in these kinds of analytical ways about the film and what they're doing in the film. It's to me a very interesting and revealing question. And as I said, I think that that Jackson did a really great job in the opening sequences of the first of the Lord of the Rings films. I think they're both they both work very admirably. So I will be very interested to see what he comes up here. What are the initial thoughts from you guys?
I wonder if Jackson is going to be able to actually pass up the chance to do a little bit more filling in of, you know, history, a la the Return of the King type, you know, back flashback kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I think that is one of the things that I shared with you, that Dave, I haven't shared with you yet, is there's been, information out that they were looking for extras with character faces. I think it was last week or the week before, there was news about, people looking at they started filming again this week, and they were looking for extras with character faces. And the rumor was that these extras with character faces were for a scene that was going to be taking place in Bree. And my first reaction was, when would they do a scene in Bree? I guess it would be Gandalf and Bilbo coming home after the adventure. But then after that, I thought, well, no, actually, it could be a flashback to Thorin and Gandalf meeting at the Prancing Pony prior to the adventure starting, which would be, given Jackson's history, that could conceivably be something he could kick off movie two with, or even movie three, I guess, for that matter. So, I think it's possible that he might not be able to, resist it, but I don't know that I really have an opinion about that in terms of whether that's really likely or not in this case. What do you think, Dave?
That's a good question because remember we were we had a long debate about we sort of assumed that the first film would start with some kind of historical flashback. I think it'd be fair to say that we actually hoped he would, and that we would get Battle of Five Armies, but we I think we debated a lot, like what do they want to start with if they're going to do a historical flashback? Is it going to be something with Battle of Five Armies? Is it going to be something with Smaug and
You
Dale
mean you're
and
talking about Azanulbazar? Azanulbazar, you meant, right? Not Battle of Five
As an
Armies.
Elbazar. Oh my God, I'm really toasted this week, apparently. I'm just like brains fried. Yeah, Battle of As an Elbazar. Come on, David. Come on. So, and I think, and I, and so I wonder if that's that dynamic's at play here, where there is a lot of history that you'd want to kind of plumb and try to set the stage, and that, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. 'Cause he did, technically, he did As an Elbazar, and he did Lonely Met the Attack on the Lonely Mountain both.
Yeah.
And really, if you start thinking sort of what are his, if he wants to do a historical flashback, what are the really, really significant events that we have left for us to present that are really impact on the story? Maybe Thrain's capture, possibly.
Something Thran related, I was
Yeah.
thinking.
In
I
fact,
like.
yeah, or whatever circumstances had Thran give him the map and key, and whatever in Jackson's universe that would be.
I mean, I would just say I love the idea, and I hope it happens at some point or other. I love the idea of doing a flashback to the meeting between Thorin and Gandalf. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's
I...
true.
Yeah, I think it could be interesting, yeah.
Uh-oh. Are you guys hearing the hum?
Hey, we're
Oh,
good.
that's probably me. I know, it's me. It's me. Okay.
Okay, there
I
we
know
go.
what it
Got
is.
it. Ah, what was it?
Okay. It's my computer. I have it plugged into my little outlet here in my car. And when I plugged it back in to power my computer, to charge my computer, it was causing the hum. So
Oh, yeah.
that mystery is solved.
Okay, very good. Anyway, so yeah, no, I think that it would be really I love the idea of the Thorin and Gandalf back scene. Here's my vote about that though. I think if that happens, it could be a good opening sequence, but that I could see being a film three opening sequence. And here's my reason for saying that, is that I think, I asked myself, what would be accomplished in a flashback to the meeting between Thorin and Gandalf? And to me, the main thing that would be accomplished would be an emphasis on Thorin's leadership and his kingship. To have a conversation about how he wants to restore his kingdom and how that could be achieved, and Gandalf agreeing to help him do that. I think of the As an Azanul Bizarre flashback that was inserted into film one, and the immediate frame of that flashback that is in Balin's dialogue, both what Balin says right before the flashback and what Balin says right after the flashback. And that whole flashback, the context of that entire flashback within the film, is on Thorin's leadership. That's when I knew, like that he was a king that I would follow, right? That's the, so it starts off with Let me explain why Thorin's a little touchy on the goblin question, right? You know, that's how Balin gets into it. And then he leaves it with, you know, like, and this is why I follow him. You know, this is why Thorin is such an awesome king and such a great leader. And I think that that is what, you know, so thinking film three, I think that that question, the question of Thorin's kingship and his, and you know, his leadership and what his kingship looks like, that's going to be a major focus, I think, of film three. I think of the line in the book when Gandalf says to Thorin that he's not making a very excellent figure as king under the mountain. He's not getting off to a good start.
Yeah, that's a good. I like that suggestion.
So I think that that's going to be a focal point. At least, okay, let me say this more honestly. That's what I would make a focal point of film three, as everything around, you know, the Siege of the Lonely Mountain deteriorates. Basically, Thorin temporarily falling short of the ideal that is painted for us in the Azanul Bazaar sequence by Balin. And we get this, you know, Thorin as excellent, courageous, and self-sacrificial leader. And then we get Thorin instead giving into, you know, pride and greed and you know, pigheadedness, leading up to the Battle of Five Armies. And then, you know, the Restoration. You know, then back to self-sacrifice and courage in his last charge during the battle. But again, I think that to me, that's one of the things that would be that could be very effectually emphasized by a flashback shot of right. The conversation between Thorin and Gandalf.
Yeah, and I think that would definitely fit with everything else that they've done, and I agree. It seems like the right place for it would be the third film to remind us of that, and also to kind of bring after everything that's probably going to happen in the packed second film with Necromancer mm-hmm. and Dragon and everything. with all of that, it would be appropriate to have that in the third film to kind of bring us back to remind us, like, you know, what we're really here for. What is the main storyline in the films? It's you know, Thorin going to reclaim his kingship and stuff.
Right. Especially if we do get, because there will be two things basically which could serve as well, which will serve, I believe, as kind of local climaxes of the story during film two, namely the confrontation and probable death of Smaug, and quite likely the confrontation with the Necromancer. If what we have been calling the Battle of Dol Guldur and the death of Smaug at Esgaroth both happen in film two, then you're right, Dave, we might well need to start film three with a reminder of, wait, the story's not over, right? Why is the story not over? What is left to do in this story? And that, I think, could be a really excellent way for them to reestablish this idea, to say, hey, look, okay, the dragon's dead. Because remember, I mean, that happens in the book, right? You know, there's that moment when the narrator tells us that, you know, Bilbo thought that with the death of the dragon, the adventure was, properly speaking, over, right? But as we will see, he was not quite right about that. And basically, that could be like the sort of the theme of the introduction to the third film. It looks like the story is over. It looks like the adventure is over. But if you think that, you know, you will find, like Bilbo, that you are not quite right. So I do think that that's a way to do that. Now, I think one of the things we're going to need, Philip was just mentioning, you know, possibly it opens with more voiceover from old Bilbo. I can imagine a return to the frame narrative. You know, that kind of thing is certainly an available mechanism. I mean, the Fellowship, the Lord of the Rings films don't have the kind of frame mechanism that The Hobbit did. Right, you know, we don't have any of that. You know, we had the exposition from Galadriel, but that's not a frame narrative in the same sense, you know, that we got Bilbo, old Bilbo, and Frodo in Bag End at the beginning of the first Hobbit film. So it is conceivable that we could return to the frame narrative at the beginning of the second film.
Even if it's just in voiceover format, it could, it could, that could, you know, I could see that.
Conceivably, yeah, we could get some more Ian Holmes.
Especially since Bilbo at the very end says, "Well, you know, all the worst is behind us now," so right. You could start film two with old Bilbo saying some, you know, kind of addressing that.
Yeah, that's true. I do. I hope. I kind of. There's part of me that hopes that they actually do bring us back to, in some way, incorporate the frame story. I don't want to just abandon it altogether right up until like the end of the third film where it's like, oh yeah, there was a frame story. Completely forgot about that. Like, it'd be nice.
That's a good point.
I kind of wish they had done it at the end of the first film, although that might have been a little like anticlimactic, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the end of the first film I thought worked really well, and it might have been, I mean, it would have been hard for it not to feel like kind of pointless denouement at the end. And then the other thing I would say is the way they introduced the frame, it strikes me as unlikely that we're going to return to the frame prior to the end of the third film because of the way they did it. They set it up as Bilbo writing his memoirs and in this sort of confessional mode. Right, I've told you the story, now I'm going to tell you the real story. So, you know, Bilbo writing like the secret, version of the of his previous journey and his finding of the ring. And that the way that they, you know, the interaction between old Bilbo and Frodo at the beginning, where he's like, it's not ready for reading yet, right? So he's denying access in it, and that kind of, to me, sets it up for a continuous narrative all the way through, because the most logical way, it seems to me, to do the frame story breaking in again would be to do some kind of interruption or discussion with an audience member. A conversation between him and Frodo, say. But he's excluded Frodo from this story at the beginning, so that's not gonna happen. So we certainly are not going to get. So, and again, you know, to me, and I've made this parallel before. But for me, when I think about this kind of frame narrative in a film, I always go back to The Princess Bride, which is for me like the canonical version of this kind of film narrative, you know, with a story being told, like, having a storyteller and an audience, and then, you know, the film that we're doing. So yeah, The Princess Bride is for me like the prime example of this kind of technique.
So Peter Falk is Bilbo and Fred Savage is Frodo.
Exactly. Yeah. And but of course, you'll notice the way that they manage the actually, I could see Peter Falk as old Bilbo. You know,
Savage.
Yeah. Well, no, not Fred Savage.
Well, when
that.
He was little, Fred Savage is like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the point is, of course, the return to the frame narrative, as it's managed there, is managed by interactions with the, you know, when the audience interrupts or asks a question or something like that. And but basically there would have to be some kind of excuse to return. If we're given, like, now Bilbo is going to sit and write the whole story, there'd have to be some reason that he breaks off or does something else. And that seems to me kind of forced because he's not interacting with anybody. Yeah. You know, it's his own private thing. So there'd have to be some reason, something that'd have to be accomplished by returning to the frame narrative. And although it's possible that something could be, I don't see what exactly would be accomplished or how it would be accomplished. He could be interrupted. I mean, he could be writing and somebody could break in on him or something. I mean, they could even conceivably continue the theme that is, as they, you know, the way that they made the opening frame narrative not only Bilbo and Frodo in Bag End, but Bilbo and Frodo in Bag End on the day that the Fellowship of the Ring film begins, with Frodo going off to meet Gandalf.
I was just going to say, you know, if Frodo shows back up again, Gandalf's going to have to be with him if we're in the frame there.
And he could. They could do a conversation between old Bilbo and Gandalf when Gandalf returns, because you'll recall, in the spirit of, like, showing back scenes that didn't, you know, that we didn't see in the Fellowship of the Ring film, you know, you'll remember that we get Frodo meeting Gandalf, Frodo riding in the cart with Gandalf back towards Bag End, and, you know, but we don't see Gandalf arriving at Bag End, right? You know, it sort of cuts forward at that point. So it's conceivable. It's possible.
So we could have Gandalf saying, Gandalf saying, so what do you got there? What are you doing? Oh, I'm writing my story. And Gandalf goes, oh, yeah, good times, good times.
Right. Some kind of conversation between Gandalf and even conceivably something like Gandalf being like, you know, which story are you writing, I wonder? Or like, which version of the story are you writing, I wonder? That could be done.
Well, that's
the more I think about this, the more possibilities that seems to have.
I could see Bilbo saying something like, you know, I really thought everything was behind us when we stood on the Carrick, you know, and then we dissolve into the story or something like that. So, it's conceivable.
It's possible. I mean, Gandalf's arrival would be a sufficient excuse, perhaps, to interrupt the frame narrative, to interrupt with the frame narrative again.
Now, Brianna makes a good point. Now, I have to admit that Brianna and I, by proxy, have an advantage in that Brianna's done this awesome job of stringing together all of the footage that we have been, you know, privy to from Jackson over the last year plus into sort of a chronological narrative. And she makes a point if there's that deleted scene of, we assume it's built, well, we know it's Gandalf at a party of hobbits, you know, children. And we're assuming it's the scene where he actually meets Bilbo as a child. And she makes a point of saying, that's a flashback that could also conceivably be on the list.
Yeah, there is a flashback scene floating around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where would that? Mm-hmm. Would this be the moment for that? Well, okay, so I guess I have two questions. My first question is, would this be the moment for that flashback? And my second question is, what would be the moment for that flashback?
Right, yeah.
For me, the point of the flashback would probably be more to show Tookishness, you know, the latent Tookishness that maybe Bilbo had. But you're right. I mean, you know, place for that probably would have been sometime in film one, if that's what you're wanting to show. Because to me, that's really the only reason you'd have it, really, is to show Bilbo being sort of a different personality than what he is. But by the time we're at the end of film one, he's already kind of shifted, right?
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree with what Brent just said, which is that he thinks that the young Hobbit, young Bilbo flashback is going to be an extended version. I think it's probably a film one extended version thing, is what I would think. That would be because it's hard to see how that kind of background setup for Bilbo's character could be relevant at this point.
At that point,
because we've established the Tookishness. Yeah. I mean, that's been. Yeah. That was one of the big struggles, you know, him going from Bilbo moving in his character from I am a Baggins of Bag End and I refuse to go on the journey to I am leaping forward and killing orcs to defend Thorin at the end. Like, that's the, you know, that's the arc. That arc has gone. You know, that arc has happened. So I think it's
that
probably
arc has sailed.
Yep, that arc has sailed. Yes, exactly. But I also want to bring up what Michael Lucero was just saying, which I think is a really good suggestion. He says, what if Gandalf does show up or with Bilbo in the frame narrative, or with Frodo in the frame narrative, and the third movie could end by cutting away from the flashback story and have the last scene from the actual Hobbit book, that is Bilbo, you know, the Bilbo saying thank goodness and handing him the tobacco jar, in the frame narrative instead of in the actual you know, sort of flashback story. I think that's really interesting
at the end,
as an ending mechanism rather than as a film opening mechanism. And I do agree with him. If we're going to get that conversation, the conversation between Bilbo and Gandalf with which the book ends, if we're going to get that, it would make to me more sense to put it within
the
60 years later frame sequence.
Right.
Of course, even
right.
in the book, it's significantly later. I mean, time passes
right.
Between the end of the action and Bilbo's return journey, and then, you know, at some undefined number of years later, Balin and Gandalf visit, and they have that conversation. So, you know, rather than introducing a third time frame within the story of the film, I would think that they would do that in the 60 years later frame. So I like that. And you know, and if that's true, if that's going to be where it's going to go, as Michael's suggesting, then I would imagine that they would not, in fact, then be using Gandalf's arrival.
No, that would be a third movie. Yeah.
One in the middle.
So, I mean, they have talked about that Frodo being, you know, they have talked about it being bookends. I mean, you know, every time they've interviewed Elijah Wood, you know, he talks about Frodo being bookends, meaning beginning and end of the trilogy. So, you know, there hasn't been really any indication, although I guess at that time there was only going to be two movies. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dave, sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, I think, no worries, by the way. I don't think they'll start with the frame story on this. I think maybe they might start with voiceover, like in the beginning of the first film. So maybe like older Bilbo voicing over some set of events, just to remind us of it. But I don't know. You know, the one thing that a lot of people did say about the first film is I think a lot of Tolkien fans were gratified to see the really extensive Dale and Lonely Mountain scene and all the historical events, and then the callback to old Bilbo and old Frodo. But then a lot of people are like, at the same time, the movie basically didn't start until about a half hour in. And it's hard. Like, if they do that again, they're going to get mocked by the critics.
Right.
They're just going to get hammered. And I don't think they have time for it. There's part of me that, like, the idea that kind of appeals to me, and I know a lot of people are talking about Bjorn, how will they, maybe they'll start at Bjorn's house with the dwarves being chased in by bees and stuff. There's part of me that actually thinks that kind of one possibility that would be really efficient way to get the film rolling fast would be to start the film with the dwarves already in Bjorn's house sitting at dinner with Bilbo
right.
narrating over it. Like, let's just get into this film and get going. Like, no, like, 20-minute introductory sequence of getting into Bjorn's house with kind of weirdness with bees, or, like, the, you know, long introductions or extensive history, or, you know, we can maybe insert a historic, like, because the Battle of Azanulbazar, what that showed us is they can find ways to do flashbacks and history without doing it as a prologue. Like, they have no qualms
right.
about just inserting it right into
right.
the middle of the story. So there's something
right.
that appeals to me about
right.
the idea of, like, let's just accelerate right into the film. Let's not even bother with the Bjorn introduction. Let's just start with them sitting at the table having a meal at Bjorn's house. And then you can maybe have Bilbo narrating
yeah.
over it.
So, okay. But now, if that's the case, that still is a return to frame narrative, right? Because we have old Bilbo narrating.
If we have old Bilbo narrating, then yes, I suppose.
Rather than action continues in real time.
It depends on what the focus is. I mean, if the focus is on them sitting in Bjorn's house, then that's carrying on. But I want to introduce another possibility. Because
okay.
though I agree with you, Dave, I wouldn't expect nearly so prolonged a prologue thing. Yet there is one piece of background that I think would be very sufficiently useful to the plot of the story that is going to unfold,
mm-hmm.
that it might be worth them venturing on at least a couple minutes of background. And here I'm thinking of Gandalf's finding of the map. And the
mm-hmm.
background, some background with Thrain
mm-hmm.
and the necromancer and stuff, because Gandalf is soon going to depart. So at some point or other, we're going to have to get, first of all, we have absolutely no idea how Gandalf came across the map. That has been left a complete blank by film one.
That's true.
You know, he just pulls it, it looks like literally pulls it out of his sleeve at the party, and it's possible, it may well be that we're never going to learn that. I mean, he may just leave that. That's conceivable. It's not like I can't imagine that. But we are, I think that it could be something that was left unexplained in order to come back and explain later. Because if we do get the background encounter between Gandalf and Thrain, that could help to set up. You combine that with what we learned about the Necromancer in film one in order to give a more clear and focused setup for the Dol Guldur plot, which will be presumably moving along in film number two. Because we're all ready for the continued journey of, you know, Bilbo and Thorin and the dwarves. I mean, as you say, we could easily carry on with that. Let's get into Beorn's house and keep trucking through Mirkwood. But we are ready for the Dol Guldur plot, but the film viewing audience as a whole, I think, is still insufficiently prepared for the Dol Guldur plot, and connections need to be made.
Well, and that's one of the things, Corey, that you had come up with, we had talked about before we started, yeah. And actually Kay Ben Avraham has said this. She says, is there a chance the movie might start from a completely fresh character arc, the Mirkwood Elves or some such? And we had talked about, you know, it could still be in real time, but it could be meanwhile elsewhere in Middle-earth,
right.
Of beginning, yep. Where maybe it's Bolg reporting to Sauron or Azog doing something, you know, so the movie could actually start with
or
a different
Legolas and Toriel,
line. Or you know, Legolas and Toriel, going out to hunt spiders or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Entirely possible. I mean, we could get here's what's going on in with some of the other characters and some of the subplots, which did not emerge in film one, but will be important in film two. I could definitely see that.
Right. And if that's the case, that's still real time. I mean, it's still happening in real time.
Right.
It's just somewhere else.
What about
a flashback to the finding of the map? I find very attractive. But go ahead, Dave.
Me too. I like that one.
What about a trick that works similar to the way they transition from the Smaug attack flashback to the frame story, where we start with the story of Thrain's map, or it told in some form or fashion, and maybe even Thrain's fate, voiceover by, let's say, Gandalf, maybe. I see it's the most sensible person telling it. And then we find out that they're actually sitting at dinner at Bjorn's house telling the story.
Yep. That's actually what made me think of – that's why I brought that up when I did, Dave, because your talk about them sitting around in Bjorn's house at dinner is what made me think of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we get that in Gandalf's voice, and then he – because it would be perfect natural for them to be sitting around at dinner in Bjorn's house telling stories and somebody to have said, you know, Gandalf, where did you get this map? And Gandalf telling the story. Absolutely. I could easily see that.
That's true. It's not coming out of nowhere. There's a storyline there because Gandalf and Thorin on multiple occasions have exchanges related to the map and the key where basically Thorin says, you know, like that wasn't yours to withhold from me. You know, Gandalf tells him like, I didn't give that to you so you could do X, Y, and Z. And Thorin's like, I didn't know that that was yours to keep from me. I'm pretty sure that was mine.
Right. Yeah.
Very nice. Absolutely. Very nice script writing there. Yes.
Yeah, because especially since, you know, there is that moment when in the book, when Thorin says something somewhat slighting, or at least with potential negative implications, when he asks Gandalf where he came by the key and the map, and Gandalf rises to it, and he's like, "I didn't come by it; I was given it." So that that kind of an exchange, and where he says that, like, you know, the dwarf who gave it to him couldn't even remember his own name, and never told me yours. So, you know, all in all, I think I should be praised and thanked. He says.
I think back to the movie where Gandalf basically says, your father gave it to me, and Thorin never says a word to him. You know, I mean, I could see, like, in Beorn's house, Thorin saying, by the way, I've been meaning to ask you.
Right.
Because I never did ask you. You said my
Yep.
father gave it to you. You know, it's like we've gone through all this stuff. I mean, you know, I always thought that was an odd thing that Thorin, given Thorin's character, wouldn't have said to Gandalf, "What do you mean my father gave it to you?" You know, kind of thing. So,
Well, you know, if we do just come right into sitting around the table in Beorn's Hall, if we did that, I would hope that we would get the animals waiting tables without any comment whatsoever. Like, that would be awesome. You know, like, they're all sitting around, and then you just see in the background, like, a dog walking on its hind legs carrying a tray, and somebody, like, taking a drink off the tray, and nobody comments on it or says anything, and then we
or
just
better yet,
walk off
you
the
start the movie with a fade in on a tray that's obviously
screen.
being carried, and then you pan out and it's a dog. That's how the movie starts.
Yep.
That's what I want that. I'm gonna vote for that now, just out of pure desire. If they don't do that, I'll be devastated.
Tendency to think that Jackson's going to start us off on a more adrenaline pumping beginning. I mean, you know, like Yana says in the questions, you know, because we're kind of skipping over the fact that we've seen this scene of them running through Beorn's front doors as if they were fleeing something, which many of us think are probably bees. And I said, well, you know, just because we've seen that doesn't mean it's going to be in the movie. It could be an extended edition. But I do think that something like that is more Jackson's style, you know, for them to be fleeing something, you know, get the action pumping as soon as possible. I don't know that, but again, you know, our question really is how's the movie going to begin? You know, that could be a couple of scenes in. It may not be the very beginning of the movie.
I mean, I don't know. I think certainly the evidence of, you know, the previous films that we have to work with does not give us a very large statistical sample. Two is not a very large statistical sample. I'm thinking of the Two Towers and the Return of the King films, but both of those do begin with flashbacks, so we definitely have plenty of precedent for that kind of thing. And I do think there are, now I'm not sure, there do seem to be fewer necessary flashbacks available to us. Not that I would have predicted the finding of the ring and the strangling of Diagol. I don't think I would have predicted that as an obvious and necessary flashback. You know, had we been doing the Riddles in the Dark prior to the release of that film, I don't think I would have predicted that opening.
No, I wouldn't have either.
I certainly wouldn't have predicted Gandalf and the Balrog either.
Nope.
So, you know, we have, you know, we're saying, like, well, there's not too many more flashbacks they can do, and that, well, apparently, he can think of flashbacks that we wouldn't have thought of, because I am sure I wouldn't have thought of either one of those.
That's right. If we can't think of it, then it's not going to happen.
Right. As we've seen, there's ample evidence for that.
Brianna makes a really good point here, which is, you know, in the case in the storytelling mode, if we are talking flashback, it's also, you know, the opening sequence. Who is having the flashback? Whose head are we starting the film in? And how does that start their character arc for this film? Which I think is really pertinent if we're talking, you know, if we're thinking in terms of a flashback for the opening. So I just wanted to put that in because I think those are good points.
Yeah, no, it's true, exactly. I mean, you know, the way that I think starting the film, starting the Two Towers, concerning Gandalf, but in the head of Frodo, is important and does establish an important thing for that film. Starting the third film essentially in the head of Gollum, is also a very interesting and important choice, I think, for that film. So I agree. But I'm kind of torn, you know, to sort of think about it in that context. If we start this film in somebody's head, in whose head do we start it? Candidates would be old Bilbo, young Bilbo, Gandalf, Thorin. You know, there are a lot of possibilities there. And you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. In some ways, I kind of like the Gandalf. Or again, it could be something completely different. You know, I mean, Smaug's head. Who knows? You know,
So maybe Smaug will have his Turin dream at the beginning of movie two.
you know, I was wondering about it. It's going to be one of my Smaug-related questions when we get to Smaug eventually, is are we going to get Smaug's little Turin dream?
Ooh, I'm gonna remember that for a conundrum for
Yeah,
Laura and I
yeah.
to do. Yeah, I hope
And just
so.
to explain to people, I've talked about this several times in my Mythgard classes, but if you read through his first trip, Bilbo's first trip down, Smaug is asleep and he's having a dream. The book describes him having a dream. He has a dream in which a warrior, altogether insignificant in size but equipped with a bitter sword, features most unpleasantly, most uncomfortably. So he's having this dream about a small dragon slayer with a nasty sword, and there are two sort of schools of thought on how to read this. One is that this is a relic from in the initial drafts when Tolkien was planning to have Bilbo himself kill Smaug with Sting, and that therefore this dream, which is present in those initial drafts, is basically sort of a foreshadowing of what's going to be happening, and that when Tolkien changed his mind about how Smaug was going to die, in the later revisions of it, he just didn't alter the dream. That's one school of thought. The one that I myself prefer is that Tolkien himself is thinking of Turin, that this is another one of those echoes of the Silmarillion stuff. Tolkien had been thinking a lot about Turin Turambar when he was writing The Hobbit. It was not, his writing of The Hobbit was not long after he had just been working on the very long alliterative Nanihin Hurin, the alliterative Turin story that he was writing a little bit before he wrote The Lay of Lathian. So in the mid-20s, within the last decade, he had written, rewritten, and then rewritten in alliterative poetry form the story of Turin Turambar. It was very much in his head at this time. So I've always kind of read that as a little nod to Turin and Glaurung, that's the story, that basically Smaug is having a dream in which in his dream he's kind of remembering the story of how Glaurung died, back in the First Age.
Right.
So I just to explain, we're talking about the Turin dream. I want to make sure people know what we're talking about, because that's not explicitly labeled in that way in the book. But it would be really interesting to see if we get a Turin dream. And now that would be an interesting opening sequence, though, wouldn't it? To get a dragon slaying sequence, which turns out to be Smaug's dream.
Yeah.
He wakes up, because it would connect with the end of the first film, right? The end of the first film, we get Smaug's eye opening.
Right.
So we don't end the first film in the head of Smaug, but we end it very near the head of Smaug, and with that image of him waking up. So, maybe that's that. That would be unexpected. That would be kind of cool.
Now, but given the other thing, which is sort of their tendency to want to tweak, the Boyens Walsh Jackson trio, is I could see a premonition dream, but it would probably end up being a bowman rather than a swordsman, in the movie,
Right,
just so
possibly.
that the audience, isn't confused, but a premonition dream. I mean, if the dragon has a premonition dream of dying at the hands of a mortal, it counts in my book as a Turin dream.
Geez, so many good options.
I
I know.
agree. I agree. So let's
Oh,
go
Chuck
through a
Snow
few.
was asking what a dragon slaying suit. Chuck Snow is asking what a dragon slaying sequence. Step on the lack of a Silmarillion rites. No, because the dream that Smaug has is it's actually in The Hobbit.
It's in The
It's in the
Hobbit.
book
He
The
has a
Hobbit that
dream
Smaug
of a
has
dragon
this
being killed
dream.
by a
Yeah.
sword. So yeah, no, there's
But
no way
it's
they could be
quite
gotten for that.
yeah.
And they would have to get pretty detailed to for anyone to be able to say that they're actually depicting the story of Turin Turambar. I mean, you'd have to get
Turin,
like
yeah.
names and the exact
I mean,
scenario.
even
You'd
if he
have
has
to
a
get
black sword, they could
right,
say, oh,
exactly.
well, we thought a black sword would be a good idea.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, black swords look cool. I don't know, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
so yeah, I it would that would be fantastically difficult, I think, to get them on that. But anyway, we should let's officially enumerate our options. I mean, we've been kind of talking through them,
okay.
And so the options, and you know, if people present can think of things that we have overlooked, we've come up with four options which seem to us relatively inclusive as covering the way that they could do this. So our question is just simply, what will be the opening scene of film number two? And our options are A, that we will be continuing the story in real time. And that can include, so that would include joining Bilbo, Thorin, Gandalf, and company at the Carrick, right after the Carrick, in Beorn's house, whatever, just basically the continuation of the story in real time. It would also include a scene from somewhere else that's still contemporaneous. Like, you know, we get a scene of Legolas and Toriel, you know, setting out to find out what's going on with the evil in the forest or something. As long as it's a, this is going on at the same time that the, you know, that Bilbo and Thorin are coming off the Carrick and going to Beorn's house, it would count in this category. So again, so the first is we continue with this, we just continue with the story in real time. The second option would be a flashback. So B is...
No, I have Return to the Frame narrative. Oh, we switched it to Return to the Frame.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Return to Frame narrative is B. So A is continue in real time. B is Return to the Frame narrative. So that's like, basically, if Ian Holm features, it's almost certainly Return to the Frame narrative. Certainly if we see Ian Holm as old Bilbo on screen, or if we see, you know, so if we get any Elijah Wood or Ian Holm, it is B. And then C is flashback, right? Am I getting the sequence right? Okay. C is flashback. So again, any historical thing. So this could be a matter of more distant historical relevance. It could be recent past. So again, both the Two Towers opening and the Return of the King opening would count as flashback. Like, you know, so C would be the correct answer for either one of those two films. The one of which is a flashback to the previous movie, and the second of which is a flashback to something which happened many, you know, hundreds of years before.
That's true,
So, any flashback would be C. And then D is an expositional sequence. Something like the voiceover account of the history of Erebor we got in film one, obviously, like the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring is like the classic voiceover exposition thing. I don't think exposition is terribly likely, but it seemed to be a logical option.
It's certainly an option. Yeah. Right.
Now, you know, Yana's asking even just a voiceover. I'm assuming, Yana, you're talking about Ian Holm there. If we get Ian Holm's voice narrating some kind of historical thing, I would count that as exposition, not Return to the Frame narrative. Return to the Frame narrative, I would want to see the inside of Bag End. I would want to see Ian Holm or Elijah Wood on screen. It would have to be like the film is actually bringing us into that later time frame, not just hearing a voice from it. If we just get Ian Holm voiceover, I would count that as exposition.
Interesting.
It's a hard choice. This is a hard choice.
It is a hard choice.
I keep flip-flopping between two of them. At least I'm not flip-flopping. Oh, and Yana, by the way, makes the point of saying, I think this is our first riddle that doesn't have a book answer. I mean, obviously this riddle doesn't have a book answer, but his point is, I think this is the first of this season.
Of this season,
to not have
yeah,
a book answer.
It is.
Yes.
It is. It's because this is, you know, when we're asking things just about how they're going to do things in the film, the closest thing to a book answer is A, which is it continues in real time. That is,
there's no
gap. There's no change that happens. it's really not an actual book answer. But yes.
He's right, actually. Everything, we've done pretty good, actually. Everything up until now, and we're almost at the midpoint of the year now, we have been tying to the book. So kudos to us for doing that for so long.
Yeah. Let's see. Michael suggests, he says, I could see a Bjorn-narrated flashback ending with a cut to the meal in his house, where he ends with, and that's why I hate the goblins. Yeah, that would be C to me. That would be flashback. I would say, well, I mean, I guess if you say, if we get voiceover narration, I'd be willing to call it exposition. But if we're just getting, like, Bjorn fighting goblins and, like, being chased out of his homeland, then that would be a flashback.
So flashback's really action, I mean, action on film and visual action.
Right, right, yeah.
And exposition is voiceover, you know, like you were saying about old Bilbo versus, you know, frame narrative versus exposition. So voiceover of old Bilbo would be exposition, whereas something in Bag End, obviously, is frame narrative.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that the difference between flashback and exposition for me in this regard is exposition is voiceover narrative illustrated by scenes, you know, by visual scenes.
Ah, got it.
Flashback
yeah, okay.
is showing okay. us a scene. Like, again, I just refer
the
back to,
scene,
to the
yeah.
two classic examples. We just got Gandalf and the Balrog fighting and then plummeting into the abyss. We just got Sméagol and Diagol fishing, you know, and
right.
finding the ring and strangling each other. So those are flashbacks. Whereas,
right.
again, if you just take by itself the attack of Smaug on Erebor and the setup, you know, that's exposition because it's Bilbo relating the story and that
it's
story
being narrated.
Being punctuated
yeah.
and illustrated by visual images and
right.
segments. So
right.
even when we get something like, Thorin, slightly younger Thorin, speaking to very much younger Balin, saying dragon is coming, you know, then like that's still flashback or that's still exposition rather. You have to just like be doing the previous scene in order for it to count as a flashback, I would say.
Okay. So
don't you think, Dave, does that make sense as a distinction?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Interesting. So
that
that's the distinction.
That would mean that technically, okay. in these terms, the Battle of Azanulbazar would be exposition, because it's primarily Balin telling the story, and we're getting.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So Balin telling the story with the voiceover, the battle is up. That was actually exposition. Yeah.
Yeah, I would count that as exposition. Now, I mean, we call it a flashback. It's still fine, but I think for the terms of this riddle, that's what I would be. So if we're getting a narrator. And a narrator's story being visualized for us, I would count that as exposition.
Now, Murray Smith asked the question.
Yeah,
he says, if the opening is Gandalf's receiving the key, the key map from Thrian, I would say that's a flashback, but what if it opens with a brief question by a dwarf on how Gandalf got them, and he then begins to recount the story? Well, I mean, the thing, my answer to that is he's still going to have to set up that question. So there's still going to have to be something happening before the dwarf asks that question, which would make the flashback not the beginning of the movie. Does that make sense?
Yes.
In other words, it would probably be more of a real-time thing, and then it goes into flash, because you're not going to be able to just flip right into, you know, the dwarfs
right.
asking the question.
That would be a judgment call, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It would be impractical
yeah.
to do that with that. I mean, if, like, we get the opening, images and the MGM lion and all that stuff, and then the film pops up immediately to, like, Ori saying, how did you get the map after all, Gandalf? Then, that
and
would
that
be really...
And that voice.
Right.
That was a nice Ori. That was good.
Like, well, it's not really a good imitation. I was just doing doofus generally, which is kind of how they've done Ori. But anyway, it was more the genre of Ori's character rather than an actual impersonation.
Oh, right, genre, okay.
But anyway, so...
We should make the caveat of saying that we actually are saying all this stuff. I mean, it is going to be the judge's final decision, right? I mean, even though we have opinions about
right,
it, what would be
right,
the right answers.
Right.
You know,
but, I mean,
we will defer to the judges.
Yeah, because it would be a bit of a judgment call. I mean, I would think, for instance, if we get, like, 30 seconds of real-time... just in order to set up a flashback or to set up a piece of exposition, I would still count the exposition of the flashback as the real
right.
opening gambit of the film.
But if a flat back happens 20 minutes in, then it's
or
not
5 minutes
going
in, you know, then
to be. Yeah,
I
5
mean,
minutes
like
in. Yeah.
basically, if we start the film with them walking away from the Carrick or walking through Bjorn's gardens and then getting chased by bees and then sitting down to dinner and then telling stories, clearly that's a real time beginning, you know.
Right.
Yeah, what's the, okay, so now what's the fine line between flashback and action continues in real time?
Well, basically, is at what point in movie time? And I know that movie time is a rather plastic idea in these films, but if in movie time the first scene of the second film follows very soon after the end of the first film, then that counts as real time. But if it's something that happened previous to them standing on the Carrick, it's a flashback.
Okay.
Previous within the movie universe, I emphasize. Because if they depict something which in Tolkien's book time frame happened historically, but is not being introduced as necessarily happening historically in the film, it could be real time flashback. I mean, they could very well give us a scene, you know, something happening with the necromancer or the orcs or something else. Which is within Tolkien's written chronology, historical, but not being made historical by that. I mean, we've talked about how they, you know, mess fairly freely with time. And by the way, on a small side note on that subject, this is just something that came up when I was talking with Trish this morning, and I just it's kind of irrelevant, but I want to mention it before I forget about it. Many people have raised the question, would there be any possibility that we would ever see a cameo of Aragorn in the Hobbit film? And book devotees have been very quick to quash that idea and say, no, Aragorn is only like 12 or 9, I forget the exact number, but he's like an adolescent at the time of the Hobbit. We're not going to see a Viggo Mortensen cameo at any point in the Hobbit. That is true in book chronology. But I urge
Right.
people to remember, as I only myself remembered tonight, that that is not true in film chronology. The film is introduced as happening 60 years prior to the unexpected party. Remember, it is like the day before the unexpected party, when film one begins, and then we're told 60 years earlier this happens.
The long
And
expected party.
the long expected part. What did I? Yeah,
You said
the long
unexpected.
expected party. Sorry, yes. So the unexpected party is depicted as happening 60
Right.
years prior to the long expected party. And in the Two Towers film extended edition, Aragorn gives his age as 90 something. Therefore, in film time, not in book time, but in film time,
He's in his
Aragorn is
30s.
30 something at the time of the Hobbit film. So,
He could be a ranger.
it is conceivable. I'm not, that it does not mean that I am predicting a Viggo Mortensen cameo. I am merely pointing out, as I realized this morning when I thought it through, that a Viggo Mortensen cameo is not so impossible
It's
as
theoretically possible.
very. It's theoretically possible.
Right.
Just as a side note, wanted to point that out before I forgot about
Thank you.
it. Okay. But anyway, what we're talking about flashbacks and what would count as a flashback, and thinking about film chronology versus book chronology is what got me thinking about that. So yeah, anything that's previous, anything that's historical. So certainly, Gandalf finding the map would be historical. Gandalf meeting and talking to Thran would count as flashback. Gandalf meeting with Thorin, you know, prior, you know, at the Prancing Pony would be a flashback. You know, the you could do a historical flashback. We could get like the imprisoning of the Nazgul in their tombs as a flashback, conceivably.
Right.
Yeah, I don't
Or what
know.
happens to Thrain when he gets dragged away at Azor Ahai?
Yeah, we could get that.
I
We could
mean,
get another
we could
shot of
get
the
an
Battle of
introduction to
Azor
Bolg
Ahai.
of some kind.
Yep,
Yeah, we could
yep.
get some kind of introduction to Bolg in the past or something.
Bolg's troubled childhood growing up with his manic, dismembered father. Yeah, absolutely. Little soulful shots of young Bolg with wide brown eyes looking on as his father is dismembered. Absolutely. Absolutely. That would count.
Well, we know that doesn't happen because we see him getting his adult ass whooped as
Oh, that's
Balthazar.
right, you're
So,
right. No, that's
so.
true, that's true. But we could get shots of like Bolg's. But okay, no, here we go. Flashback to Bolg's resurrection as a Zomborg by the Necromancer.
Oh yeah, there we
As
go.
a Zomborg.
That's what I'm voting for.
Yep, that's it. That is totally it.
Now,
I
see, I
only
gotta
just
tell you
now thought of
guys,
it.
to those Facebook people who say, "Oh my God, Trisha's got this laugh that just drives me nuts," my answer to that is, if Dave and Corey were not so darn funny, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, it's all our fault,
It's
really.
your fault because even when I re-listen to these on podcasts, I still laugh at the same spots. So.
Yeah. Ooh, hey, Philip just had a really good suggestion. The backstory of the girl who dropped her doll in the first film. So yeah, so we get
Oh, Yana will love
the opening shot is well, actually, this would be a real time shot. Like we get the burnt the singed doll. And like the old woman holding the singed doll,
A tear, one tear running down her cheek.
exactly, as the setup for when she comes in and turns out to be like Bard's mom or something like that. As we talked about the possible, huge tie-ins between the doll burning, burning doll girl and the
Just
Bard
what I
plot.
thought. Yana is very excited about that opening. That's Yana's opening. He
Yes.
loves that doll.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Michael says, no, a flashback to the toy maker of Dale making the doll. Yeah, absolutely. As a setup to later on. No, perfect. Perfect. Yep. Yep.
God.
Absolutely.
Right in line. I mean, we have so little to cover in movie two that this would be the perfect
Yeah,
opening for the
this is
movie.
a perfect time to digress on the history of the doll. I think a 20-minute sequence where we see it first being created and then being passed down. You know,
Right.
actually, a nice.
And then hand it to Bart.
I'd like a sequence where, like, kind of like Aragorn falling over the cliff and floating down the river. We get something like that where the doll sort of gets lost and just is sort of passing from person to person.
Lost and found again. Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. No, this is the heirloom doll, which is the
Well, you
symbol
know,
of the
if
lost
Jackson doesn't
Dale.
do this, we have a fan pick here that could be made, right? We have Yana,
Absolutely.
you could actually do a movie on this.
Yes.
Get a hold of
Yes.
what's her name, Kate Madison. Kat.
Yes, a documentary, a dramatic documentary short on the doll of Dale. Yep.
Doll of Dale.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
If I get
Well,
a
I
fifth
think
horse and it's a mare, that's what I'll call her. The Doll of
that's
Dale.
excellent. The doll of Dale. That is an excellent thing. But no, the Zomborg idea, Bolg's like, he's alive. That would be a perfect opening. Perfect opening. Because of course it would introduce us then to the necromancer, right? So we got like the whole,
Oh, there
who
you
is this
go.
necromancer guy? There is a
Exactly.
necromancer who is in, but now we get who is the necromancer? Well, the unholy reanimation of Bolg is our introduction to who the necromancer really is,
There you
and
go.
the revelation of his totally unrevealed and hitherto unsuspected by anybody except anybody who's read the books, like inner workings of his underground kingdom of building evil, that could totally work.
But I would want to see the Azog Bolg reunion then if this happens.
Oh
My son.
yeah.
And then he
Yeah.
accidentally rips his side open with his arm
Yeah.
because
Oh
he
no, you get the like, them running towards each other in slow motion with their arms extended, or
in a
like
field full of skulls.
in a field full of skulls. Yeah, him with, Azog holding out his spiky hands
I
and
personally,
Bolg staggering along.
I won't find the necromancer believable unless I actually get to see him necromancing.
Right, exactly. Well,
Yes,
see,
so we
that's the
must see
whole
it. We
Zomborg
must see
argument,
Zomborg.
right?
Yes.
Exactly. That's the whole Zomborg argument. We need to see some like necro action in order to really get the point here.
I gotta tell you, we've really got the listeners going now. We've got some great additions here. The doll floating next to the barrels in the river. Flashback of Azog watching Bolg hatch from a slime pit, saying he may not be that cute, but he's mine.
Yeah. And Bulk's, reanimated Bulk's first word is "Daddy." You know, oh, it would be brilliant. I'm telling you, sympathy for Bulk. I'm ready. I'm so ready for that.
I know Bulk's in Asa's knee. I got to tell you, Philip. Really, I mean, I think I said this. Maybe I can't remember if I said it in the episode or somewhere. I said the whole Bulk, Mrs. Bulk. I mean, the whole Azog, Mrs. Azog, Bulk family unit just makes me want to like. I just it makes me cringe to even think about.
Yep. 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 That's true. Yeah, Bulk and his mom. I mean, how touching would that be? No, see, that's how you start the sequence. You start the sequence with Mrs. Azog to the necromancer, you know.
Oh, for like her son.
Weeping over the body of her son. This would be the flashback, right? Just after Azanul Bazar, you know, like, return my son to me. And evil necromancer Sauron being like, you know, it shall be
moved.
So. And,
yes.
And he's you know, but.
He like, will be my lieutenant.
Soulful. Yeah, it's cool. Cool. Yep. Oh, exactly.
This seems like by far the most likely possibility that we've enumerated.
Yeah,
so
no, everything. This has got to be it, right? So yeah, so the opening sequence, the first, you know, when the lights go up for the first time, we get Mrs. Azog weeping over the corpse of Bulk. That's it. That's totally what it's going to be.
Kay says she could sing like Luthien to move him.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's, you know, to not only get a female orc, but to get a female orc in a Luthien parallel. Oh, my goodness.
Brilliant.
Oh. No, I think I would just die. I mean, I think I would absolutely just collapse in the theater if that happened. I mean, I really... Wow, that's hysterical.
This may become a memorable episode, you know, I mean, given the way the movie begins, we could be, you know, we may stand up in the movie theater and go, oh my God!
Right. Yep.
We were joking about that!
Yep. Oh, no, that'd be good. That'd be very good.
All right.
Okay, well, so back to what we actually think is likely, though it's always fun to talk about what we think would be funny.
Nowhere near as much fun as what we've come up with.
Yeah. So, okay, so what we think is actually what is actually likely. Okay, I will go ahead and start. I will go first today, and I will say that I think the likeliest answer, I'm going to go with C, flashback, is my official vote for today's riddle. I think we're getting at a flashback of some kind. And I do suspect it's going to be a White Council plot related, like a necromancer related flashback.
Mm.
Probably not, unfortunately, a Zomborg flashback, because I still just think the setup that we have had for what Gandalf is going to go do, he is about to depart from them. I mean, one of the issues at the beginning of this film is going to be Gandalf's departure. And I think that he needs to prep us for Gandalf's departure.
Yeah.
So that when Gandalf says, by the way, I'm taking off now, it doesn't seem weird. It doesn't seem random. So I think some kind of flashback, my number one guess would be the Gandalf finding the map thing. That's possible. Some kind of something which makes the Dol Guldur necromancer tomb of the Nazgul thing make sense, you know, something that makes that, you know, easier to grab onto when we get to it. That's my suspicion, but I'm not, you know, that it's possible we can get some other kind of flashback. If we get the Smaug's dream flashback, I will be enormously happy. Though if we get Smaug's dream, technically it won't be a flashback because it would be
a real time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And you're specifically
I would be wrong, but it would still be excellent.
And you're specifically saying flashback, not exposition.
Flashback, not exposition. Exactly.
So nobody narrating over it. Right.
Yep. Flashback without voiceover.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to go next, even though I don't have us listed in that order, Dave, on the thing if you're looking at it. I'm going to say A, action continues in real time, but I also think it will be White Council oriented, but I think it'll be in real time. For example, perhaps a telepathic message from from Galadriel, or, you know, something that we see, maybe Radagast finds something, or we see some doings in Dol Guldur or something. But I agree that I think it would be something that would forward this idea of Gandalf needing to leave to take care of business.
Right. Yeah. So I agree. Like a cut to meanwhile in Dol Guldur would be,
right.
You know, that would certainly be an A answer.
Right.
And it would move things forward in the same way.
Or Galadriel somehow reaching out to Gandalf with her telepathy saying, you know, red alert, red alert, we need you right away. Come to, you know, Lorien, we need to take off. You know, in other words, he gets some kind of message or from a moth, you know, whatever.
Right.
But it would be, you know, we need you, you must come, which would justify his going away. And we know that it's Dol Guldur related.
Right.
Hmm.
Okay, Dave. What about you?
I'm going with D, exposition.
All right.
I am,
so yeah, that's good.
What kind of exposition then are you anticipating?
I think we'll start with some kind of some historical thing. I think we'll get a basically remember with the thing we enumerated some kind of Thrine map flashback, but being narrated.
Yep.
By a person transitioning okay. seamlessly into a scene of that person telling the story. I think we'll get
right.
some kind of Thrine map flashback with voiceover by Gandalf transitioning directly into sitting at Beorn's or walking to Beorn's or something with Gandalf
right.
telling the story to the dwarves.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty close to what I'm predicting. I'm just predicting no voiceover. So, yeah. But yeah, no, that's that – I could definitely see a Gandalf exposition scene at the beginning. That does make a lot of sense. All right, well, we should probably run. I know that Trish needs to go, and I should go too.
I do too. Yeah, I do need to go. Yeah.
But thanks again to everyone for joining us today. And we look forward. Do we have a definite plan for our next episode? Are we going to be doing the ending for the next episode?
We don't have a definite plan. You know, we're kind of waiting. Like I said to Corey earlier, I said, I want to take Peter by his little pink polo shirt lapels and say, give us something. Because it's like, we don't want to go too far down the line, you know, without some stuff from Jackson.
We've got some significant stuff.
With the bromance. I mean, we can also talk about the bromance.
Yeah, I really want to get into, like I enjoy the kind of moving chronologically through the story, but I think some of our best episodes from the previous season were less focusing on specific sort of...
thematic.
You know, will this scene from the book take place on screen, more thematic or character-driven stuff. So I think we should get into some of those.
Okay.
Let's revisit because Dave made a list, and we'll revisit that list that Dave made in an incredibly productive and creative moment of his. And you know, because I know we have some Nazgul stuff we could cover.
Between.
We have the bromance we could cover.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. So
So stay tuned is what
here's
I'll
some,
say.
Here's
you know,
some topics
we'll probably go
got.
With something thematic. But...
Northern world geopolitics. We touched on it a little bit with our Lake Town Bard episode, but I'd really love to just do a geopolitics episode. We've got the Thorin Bilbo bromance episode, another Bilbo in the Ring episode, closing moment, an episode on revenge, an episode on Nazgul. Obviously need to do a Smaug episode at some point, so...
Yeah, and then the rest of them would come up with their first three, or for year three.
So
we have several, like, thematic and other sort of, you know,
so
other
I,
things. So we,
I think next episode we'll do one of the sort of, you know, like the politics one or the bromance or the revenge one. I'm really, really excited about the revenge one. So...
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Excellent.
Well, and we're not sure. So we figure maybe if we go back to Tuesdays again, we have had actually a request from one of our listeners, Dennis, in Australia for us to do it at a time when folks like in other far time zones could join us. So
like
we might,
a one-off different time of day one.
Yeah. So we might do that.
I know at least we're doing the time that we do is reasonable for Europeans rather than doing them in the late evening.
Yeah.
But
We could do an afternoon one. I know, you know, that's kind of early morning for people in Australia and New Zealand. But if we did sort of an afternoon our time, that could possibly cover Europe and some of the folks in Australia and New Zealand. So anyway, so we might do that. Yeah, so I would say stay tuned, but for sure not next week, but probably sometime the week after next we'll do something.
Yep, that's what we're looking at. All right, well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.